storm ready.
I can honestly say that's the best news I've heard all day.
Joe Torti Show.
Kind of reminded me of a dark, gothic Neil Diamond.
That's like exactly what I'm going for.
This is the Joe Torti Show.
What show are you listening to?
Joe Torti Show.
I'm trying to be patient, but you're making it incredibly difficult.
I can say big loud things. I can be demonstrative.
Can we just end this already?
Now it's time. The Joe Torti Show.
Yes, it is. What is going on, Philadelphia? Joe Torti here with you, 97.5 The Fanatic. Tyler Zuli producing as we're hanging out together until 8 o'clock today. And wow. We're sitting here in the depths of the quarantine, thinking about what could have been and what isn't, you know, like Final Four, March Madness, that whole kind of situation. Got anniversaries of all these great sporting events. Heard D-Line, I'm talking with Jay Billis. Fantastic interview about college basketball, obviously, and what we're missing out on, some of the great moments, the state of college basketball. If you missed that, check out the podcast on 97.5thefanatic.com. And it does make you think about all of those things that we are forced temporarily to go without. And it's frustrating for all of us, of course, and it's not something that, you know, realistically we expected to deal with. So it does make us, at least it's made me, a little bit more retrospect, let's say. It's made me think about the things like, you know, college basketball, obviously. I love March Madness, and I love everything that comes along with it. And I do love the tournaments. I love the upsets. See, I'm one of the guys who actually enjoys all parts, because I feel like college basketball fans sometimes get divided into, I only root for Cinderellas and underdogs. I only root for my team. Or I only root for dominance, and if VCU wins games, it makes me upset. I feel like that's like the breakdown, kind of. Whereas I enjoy all of that. I think it's really, really cool to watch dominant teams dominate, and the Cinderella stories are part of what March Madness is all about for me. So I really appreciate whenever those kinds of things happen across the board. Think about the memories that you have and the things that stick out to you. In terms of your sports memories, I mean, usually there's not just like, I've been an Eagles fan for 15 years now, and, you know, I just kind of watch every game and take it in and then move on to the next week and blah, 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 right? There are usually indelible moments that stick out to you and really form your fandom, really forge your appreciation for, whether it's a player or a team or a league or a sport in general. It takes star power and star players making star plays in order for that whole thing to really take root, I think. And that's not to say that that's the only reason that you watch now. But it is, I would say, a pretty good infection vector for becoming a sports fan, right? The reason that I'm even bringing all of this up is because Tyler Zuli astutely pointed out that today is April 5th, 2020. And a year ago today, the Burley Meter was born. Or the ten years ago today, the Burley Meter was born. That backhand flip when he was the opening day starter for the White Sox literally feels like last year. Can't believe that it's been 10 years. But that held up for the entire... It was one of the first plays of the season. Held up for the entire year as the play of the year. You know, it took a little bit of everything. It's the blind flick. Paul Konerko makes the barehanded grab. I mean, it was beautiful. It's fantastic. And it sticks out to people who remember watching it. They're like, oh yeah, I remember Mark Burley flipping it backwards through his legs. Oh yeah, I remember that. So the thing that I look at is that's one, I would argue, for a generation of baseball fans. If you're 17 now, right, and you're way into baseball in Chicago, for example, as a 7-year-old, you probably saw that and were like, baseball's awesome. I want this to be the thing. I want this to be my sport. And then, of course, you go and you pick your team. You learn more about it. You learn more about the history. You fall in love with the sport. And then you age 50 years like every baseball fan. Right, Tyler? Like, I feel like Tyler's about in his mid-70s at this point, considering his baseball fandom. I feel like that's the appropriate age-up area.
Yeah, every other sport, I'm 26 where I'm supposed to be.
Yes.
Yeah, baseball, I'm 104.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
We play the averages game.
Yeah. Makes me an average age person at that point.
I'm
326 is in 104.
Yeah, you're average aged. Right. I do wonder how many like Mount Rushmores or slideshows or whatever the Burley meter makes for a lot of people. And it did make me start to think, and Tyler had this great idea as well. He asked a question that got my wheels turning. What's the best sporting moment that you've ever seen live? The best play that you've ever watched live? And obviously, it's easy to see a ton of really, really cool plays now. We're in the House of Highlights era. We're in the Twitter era, where everything is available at your fingertips moments after it happens in neat little condensed forms for you to view. Very convenient. But there is something to, in my case, and this is what I'm qualifying it as. I'm not counting plays that you watch at home. I'm counting plays that you have been in attendance. You bought the ticket, sat in the seat, and you watched this play, and it stuck out to you as just absolutely insane, ridiculous. I'm going to admit right now, we're only 6 minutes into the show. I am already admitting that I am fully copping out on this. Because there are three that there's no way that I could possibly choose between because they're so different. So the first of them is a college basketball moment. And I would never, ever forget this. So one of my big traditions for my family, and I don't think any of my grade school teachers are listening right now, so hopefully this is safe. One of my family traditions, my parents both went to the University of Pittsburgh, and back when the Big East was, you know, the actual Big East, school was way less important than making sure that my sister and I got up to Madison Square Garden to see as much of the Big East tournament as we possibly could. So it started back before I can remember, and it continued all the way up until the demise of the Big East, where it's been replaced with this silly imposter that exists right now. So as a result, I mean, I have moment after moment after moment just from the Big East tournament. You know, the Kemba Walker step back over McGee to sink my parents' Pitt Panthers and send UConn onward. And that just propelled UConn on the most ridiculous. Like, Kemba Walker, I get Christian Laettner's stats and everything like that. Kemba Walker might be the best tournament player I've ever seen in a tournament setting. He might be the most ridiculous tournament player I've ever seen with my two eyes. But along the way, I'm reminded of our trip to the Garden in 2009, where a rivalry game between Connecticut and Syracuse was playing out at the Garden, and it was by far the most exciting back-and-forth ridiculous thing I've ever seen, and also a top five heroic sporting performance by an individual that I've ever seen, with Johnny Flynn putting on the performance that he put on was just absolutely spectacular. And I'll get into that in a little bit more depth. But the Syracuse UConn game was the 6 overtime game. The anniversary of that was last year, the 10th anniversary of that was last year in March. And, I mean, it might have been the greatest college basketball game ever played. So it's hard for me to put anything over that, where Syracuse beat UConn 127-117. Eric Devendorf hits the shot that he thinks wins it at 74-71. Hit like a 30-footer as the buzzer sounded. He jumped up on the table. He's banging his chest and everything else, right? And then the replay came out, and he was still just touching the ball. Six overtimes. Had Kemba Walker in that game. You had Rick Jackson, Philly product, in that game. Andy Routens was the bomber for Syracuse in that one. AJ Price and Jeff Adrian. I mean, like, if you remember Big East basketball, you're getting near the peak in 09. Johnny Flynn had 34 points, 11 assists, 6 steals, and the minutes that he played in this game, just unbelievable. I remember seeing him out on the floor just laying down, absolutely exhausted, playing 67 minutes of the 6 overtime game. Just a heroic performance. 16 of 16 at the free throw line. Was unbelievable. I was sure that Johnny Flynn was going to be really, really good. And the hip injury, obviously, with Minnesota derailed his career. But after watching that, I thought that Johnny Flynn could do whatever he wanted to do. So with that said, it's hard for me to pick above that, considering it was probably the best college basketball game I've ever seen, and that a lot of people, by the sound of things, have ever seen. Then, of course, I've got two moments that happened in the same Super Bowl, which were just insane moments. I was down in Tampa for the Cardinals-Steelers Super Bowl, and the James Harrison interception right before halftime is still, I think, the second best Super Bowl play that I've ever seen, only behind Malcolm Butler's interception, but I wasn't there for that. I think Malcolm Butler's Super Bowl winning interception is the best play in NFL history. And then the Santonio Holmes toe tap. I was sitting in an end zone, like right underneath the pirate ship there. So both of those plays happened in the end zone where I was. So I had awesome views of both of those. Off the top of my head, I think that those three are the biggest moments that I've seen. And my favorite plays that I have seen live, where I had the ticket or I was covering the game or something like that. I mean, I've seen a lot of pretty spectacular plays as well. But those three memories really do stick out to me. And they solidified, you know, why I love football and why I love college basketball and why, you know, sports in general get my blood pumping like it does for all of us. So if you have one or two, or, you know, in my case, like I said, I cheated immediately, three that you'd like to share, please feel free. You know, call in 610-632-0975. I am certain that we'll hear from one of our guests later today. Coffee Jones will join the program a little bit later. You have to get Coffee's thoughts on him. I mean, he has been in locker rooms and played, and he's obviously taken in a ton of sporting events, running around with Jaws and everything else. So he has seen some stuff. And as a Spurs fan, I can think of a couple plays that he might have seen live and in person that were just pretty insane for him. And Tyler, I know that you're as much, if not more, of a sports nut than any of us. You had to have one or two that were at the top of the queue as well.
Yeah, the first one that immediately jumped out to my head, and it wasn't necessarily the best team or the greatest game for the most part, but the one that jumped right out to my head was in 2013, Penn State beat Michigan. This is in football. Penn State beat Michigan in 4 overtimes, 43-40.
Wow.
And Penn State led the game at halftime 21-10 at Beaver Stadium. Mm-hmm. You know, so that place was raucous. Michigan, I think, then scored. I'm going to go back and take a look at the box score, but I think Michigan then scored something along the lines of maybe 21 of the next 24 points or something along that line. So they retake the lead late in the game. Let's see what it was. They were up 21-10. Michigan then led 27-24, 34-24. Okay, so they scored 24 of the next 27 points to take the lead. Wow. Penn State cuts the lead to 34-27. And then with less than 2 minutes left, Christian Hackenberg, who did nothing of good other than this particular game, found Allen Robinson like 40 yards down the sideline. Ball gets down to the one. Robinson goes over the shoulder to make the catch, gets his foot in bounds. Hackenberg scores with 27 seconds left, so they force overtime. And then the great Bill Belton picks up the game winner in four overtimes to send us Penn State fans home in a whiteout fashion. It was easily the loudest stadium I'd ever been in, and I think still to this day is. And the fact that for that Penn State team that was so undermanned to a much better Michigan team,
mm-hmm.
to have that game play out the way it did with a missed field goal from Michigan and then a blocked field goal. I don't know if you watched it. I assume you watched it on TV that game.
Yeah.
I would imagine you could hear the stadium through the TV.
Oh, my. It was hard to hear the announcers sometimes.
It was unbelievable how loud that stadium was.
Yeah.
That, to me, is the first one that jumps out in my head.
Oh, man. What did you think of Christian Hackenberg in real time when you were watching him in college?
So Christian Hackenberg suffered from the not having scholarship players more than anybody, I think,
for sure.
at Penn State, because his offensive line was not good. His first year offensive line was amazing, where Donovan Smith now is a Pro Bowl tackle for the Bucs, and prior to retiring, John Urschel was on that line. They had just converted Gary Gilliam. He was playing some like tackle tight end swing type player. So he had a really good offensive line. And then the next year they all left and he was left with nothing. And he was just, the first game of the year was the game here against Temple, where I'm pretty sure his soul still resides. Like he got pummeled into submission and never recovered.
Man. So I remember for whatever reason, I get that he was like the top pro style quarterback coming out and the second best by rivals or whatever. But I remember some reason I was just thinking, even after his freshman year where he looked like pretty good, I was thinking, I don't know if I like this guy. I don't know if this guy's got it all together. And I would get into battles with one of my now wife's significant others, who was convinced that Hackenberg, he was a big Penn State guy, Hackenberg was going to be like the number one pick in the draft and like the next big thing. So I'm always curious to know whether I was just being a hater at the time and that was the way that things were looking, or if, I was right.
I think it's probably a little bit of both. I was probably clouded a little bit by being a Penn State student and only being, 18 and 19 when he was playing his best.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing with Hackenberg. So I feel like that he probably was on trajectory to be a first round pick after that freshman year. And at the same time, I thought Stephen Bench should have started game one for Penn State.
Gotcha. Okay.
So whatever combination of the two is acceptable for a freshman that was coming in and I was a sophomore, not like I was any much older than him.
Right.
But I thought Stephen Bench should have been the starter. He played okay against Syracuse in his first game. And then it was a lot of up and downs in the first year, and then he kind of put it together. I shouldn't say a lot of up and downs. It was up and downs early, put it together late, had a really nice run, and then nothing good happened after that.
Well, I've got to give credit to the We Are Nation, because your information spies are in full effect when I'm checking out Christian Hackenberg's Wikipedia page.
Okay.
Okay. So, talks about his prolific freshman season.
Yep, pretty good.
His college career, right? Next paragraph. Hackenberg broke 10 school freshman records and one overall Penn State record in 2013.
Yeah, it was an unbelievable season. I mean, like I said, it was a little shaky to begin because he was a freshman.
Of course.
And then he was fantastic by the end.
But he was still... he threw like a lot of interceptions. He had four interceptions. But he was still completing like 72% of his passes, right? He was crazy. So after that sentence, we're one overall Penn State record in 2013. On January 2nd, 2016, Hackenberg officially declared for the 2016 NFL draft. So the Wikipedia page has been scrubbed of anything else, any non Christian Hackenberg freshman year stories. The stats are there from 2014 and 2015, but there's no write up or information about Christian Hackenberg, former Eagle great.
So when I was at Penn State, I was doing my comm classes and all that. One of our sports reporting classes was to do a sports update, you know, kind of like we do here twice an hour. I put sound together. I went to the presser and put sound in my update where I believe, I forget who it was. It might have been Deshaun Hamilton or might have been Hamilton. But I don't remember. One of the receivers said they legitimately took a shovel and buried the game tape of the Temple game on the practice field and had like a kumbaya ritual, like we're never looking at this again.
It's gone.
That's how bad it was.
Well, it's reached the Wikipedia stage as well. So that's good work by the Nittany Lion Nation. 610-632-0975. Simple questions on the table. First one being, what's the best or greatest sporting event that you've seen where you were there? Whether it's a play or a game or something like, because I broke the rules literally at step one, talking about the UConn and Syracuse 6 overtime game at Madison Square Garden in 2009. Just unbelievably formative experience. Like I was a big sports fan at the time anyway. You know, I was out of high school by that point, but being able to watch that really solidify, like people are like, why do you love college basketball as much as you do? You know, I definitely love college basketball more than I love the NBA. People say, why? You know, the players are better. I don't know, man. The 6 overtime game between Syracuse and UConn, all the emotions and all of everything that went into that game, just inject that straight into my veins. If I could have that happen all the time, that would be just unreal. Absolutely fantastic endorphins and motivational experiences and stuff like that. So there you go. We're going to get into some other stuff. Like D. Lynam got into it near the end of her show as well about Shaquille O'Neal talking about Allen Iverson and Dwayne Wade, obviously the story with Dwayne Wade meeting Iverson in the casino. But there's something else from Shaq talking about Iverson and playing against him in the 2001 NBA Finals that I definitely got some questions about. Like, when I read this, I thought that, like, I almost sent Tyler to do some investigative reporting, you know, and going through footage to see if we could find examples of something that Shaq said that he did during the game because he felt a certain way about Allen Iverson. So we'll get into that as well. Like I said, Coffee Jones will join us at 7 o'clock. Might have one or two more fun people check in over the course of the program as well. We'll wait and see about that. Rick in South Jersey says, stop talking crap on the Big East. I'm not. I love the Big East. The Big East is just dead, though.
No, yeah, that's what he means, is that they've won 3 of the last 6 national titles, he says.
Who's,
so.
Who's they?
The Big East.
Oh, okay, great. Awesome. I'm glad that Nova's been able to hold it down in a watered-down nothing league at this point. Good job. Good job, Nova. Back in the day, just to win the Big East tournament, they had to survive UConn and Pitt and Syracuse and
Georgetown,
Louisville and Georgetown. And how long do I have to go before you admit that maybe Creighton and like that crew's not quite the same? Nothing against it. Sorry, Rick. The Big East is just worse now. Nova's still good. It's the Joe Torti Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Welcome back. Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Okay. I just want to know if I'm being fair to the Big East now. Because here's the deal, right? There are still some pieces in there, in the Big East, that, you know, from the old, what I call the legit Big East. You know, back when it was good. Okay? You tell me which of these is better. Which of these conferences is better. Okay? So the current Big East, Butler, and we'll talk from basketball perspectives here. Butler, Creighton, DePaul, Georgetown, Marquette, Providence, St. John's, Seton Hall, Villanova, Xavier. I guess UConn is a future member. They're joining this year. Is that true? I think that might be true.
Basketball alone, right?
Okay.
Yeah, because football's dropping out of FBS.
I think that is true. They're going to FCS
yes.
and football.
So I would imagine that is where UConn is headed.
Right. And then they have associate members, but no basketball members there, so not necessary to lay out there. Okay? So that's it. That's the comp. Good conference. Let's talk about it, though. Let's see. When's a good time to cut it off? Whatever. Boston College, Connecticut, Georgetown, Providence, St. John's, Seton Hall, Syracuse, Villanova, Pittsburgh, Miami, Rutgers, West Virginia, Virginia Tech, Notre Dame, who I forgot to mention, Cincinnati, DePaul, Louisville, Marquette, South Florida. Don't worry, I'll wait.
That's unreal.
Which one's better?
That's unreal how good that conference was.
Come on, man. Like, the Big East, that's why you had to go to the Big East tournament, because whoever would win had to go through this ridiculous gauntlet of teams. It was like a mini NCAA tournament all crammed into a weekend. Just ridiculous.
That's why I always found it so utterly impressive when a Big East team would make a deep run in the NCAA tournament. Because they had to get smacked up.
Yes.
Four or five times before they made it to just to make it to the tournament.
But you saw the teams that did survive, they were ready for North Carolina yeah. and Duke and all. Because, you know, like, seriously, I've seen this already. I played Georgetown and Syracuse in back-to-back games. Give me a break. Like,
twice in 3 days, oftentimes.
Right, exactly. So, I don't know. That is the requiem for the Big East is like the 30 for 30 that is nearest and dearest to my heart, and it makes me the saddest, I think. But we move on. I'm trying to. I can respect what Villanova's done. By the way, over the last decade, certainly over the last 6 or 7 years, there's an argument that Villanova's been the best basketball program in the country.
I don't think there's an argument.
Like that's.
I think it's just fact.
Yeah. Right. So I can appreciate what Villanova's done, but like. Does one school make the entire conference? Like, Gonzaga is just outrageous. And they just are an unbelievably good team. And St. Mary's does stuff every once in a while, right? Does that mean that the West Coast Conference is awesome? Kind of doesn't, right? I don't know. Am I being fair? Is that being unfair to the new Big East?
I think to an extent, a little bit, just because it does still have remnants of the good old time Big East. Like, outside of Villanova, Seton Hall is still a legitimate team.
Probably better now even than they were at times back then.
Creighton has been good more so than bad. I would think so. Probably Butler the same extent. But the teams that I think that separate themselves in the old Big East more so in the new Big East are Georgetown and Xavier. Obviously, Xavier's no longer part of it.
No, they are. Xavier's still in.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. You're right. I apologize. But
Georgetown.
Yeah, Georgetown and Xavier are the two teams to me that
were in it too.
Georgetown. No, that's what I'm not saying they're not in it. I'm saying they were utterly dominant
at that time.
They're not so anymore.
Mm. I mean, so I look at it, and the teams that jump out to me, unfortunately, are the big ones, right? Like, West Virginia was an insane college basketball program. Syracuse is a college basketball program that you have to have. Pittsburgh was unbelievable. BC could do some stuff every once in a while. But, I mean, those were the... When they lost Syracuse, Louisville, Pittsburgh, I was like, oh, boy. That could have been it.
All to the ACC, too.
Yeah, man. That's crazy. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. Donnie Runyon tweets in, current Big East is so weak, ripped to a once great conference. You know, it is a shame because I think that Villanova is carrying the banner, which I would argue you would really solidify those Nova teams as some like literally all-time great teams if they were able to survive the gamut that the old Villanova teams would have had to go through. That's all I'm saying. Let's go to Todd next in Fogelsville on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, Todd.
Hey, guys. I love listening to your station, even though I'm a Green Bay fan. Two quick stories.
Okay.
Me and a bunch of buddies were, we had plans to attend a Packer game in Lambeau, which we've done a number of times. And it just happened to fall on a Monday night, which we thought was great. But that was the first Monday night game that was played after 9/11 happened. And I just remember, I think it was a backup middle linebacker ran across the field with this gigantic American flag. That's something that I'll never forget. The other quick story is I was with my buddy Gus, and he was a big Jets fan, and he got tickets to when the Packers were in town. So we go to the game, and him and I have been buddies for a long time. He's got his Jets stuff on. I got my Packers stuff on. And I don't know if you guys remember this guy's name. He was a kicker for the Packers at the time. The name was Chris Jackie. And we were sitting in the end zone where he was attempting a field goal, and it looks like it's going in. So I'm the only guy standing up in the end zone in my Packer gear on, and it doinks off the upright and bounces out. I sit back down like dejected, and then this little 7 or 8 year old boy taps me on the shoulder, and I turn around. And he goes, "You guys suck." So talk about getting kick sand in your face. And that was like to win the game with like 5 seconds left to go. Those are the two things that sticked in my mind. It was so funny at the time.
Oh, Todd, that's all. Anyway. So do you have like pictures or do you keep tickets or anything like that? Or is it all just in the memory?
No. I keep any Packer game that I go to, I always keep and I put them away like in a file cabinet because you just never know, when, something like that's going to come up and, because we've seen them all over the place. I've seen them at Lambeau at least a dozen times. Of course, at the Vet, of course, Jets and Giants Stadium, the old one and the new one. So down in Carolina, out in Denver, Colorado. So, yeah, it was just those are the two that just stick in my brain for whatever reason.
That's awesome, Todd. Hey, thanks for the phone call, man. Appreciate it. And that probably did make you more of a football fan, a better football fan. You think if you're a Green Bay fan that you've had one or two things over the course of the last like 20 years, 25 years that might stick out in your mind?
You know, it's funny too that they have all these great memories, and I don't mean to rub it in for Todd, and they've had two Hall of Fame quarterbacks legitimately back-to-back, and for, what, the better part of now closing in on probably 30 years between the two of them? They have two Super Bowls.
Crazy, right?
You would think that's not enough.
No, not for the royalty that they had. No, certainly not.
I don't know how you feel about it, but when I look back at the Packers of the 2010s, much like kind of like I look back at the Phillies of the late 2000s, the team that won the championship was probably the worst Packers team of them all.
Well, the thing about that Packers team was that they had like 30 guys on injured reserve or something like that. So, like, I don't know how good they would have been at full strength, but there were definitely Packer teams that I liked way more before and after.
Right.
You're right about that.
Like, the year right after that, and I know how hard it is to repeat, but the year right after that, was that the team that lost to Kaepernick in the divisional round? And they had a, they might have been like 14-2 that year.
I'm trying to think. One of the years they took a big loss because Nick Collins hurt his neck, and I can't remember if that was that year. Yeah, it was. It was the year after that. Man, oh man.
Because then, right after that, Kaepernick and the Niners lost to the Giants, right?
I think so.
To then beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Because the Kaepernick 49ers Super Bowl run was 2012.
Was the year after that.
Right.
Yep.
So, yeah, 2011 was the year after the Super Bowl. And then, yeah, man, that's crazy. That is nuts. Those Packer teams. But you know what? Got a couple Super Bowls. Eagles still looking for number two. I'm assuming that anyone who was at the Super Bowl would talk about Philly special being just the best top thing that could ever possibly happen. I'm trying to think if there's anything similar. Any moments in the World Series that would hold a candle to that?
Probably Utley's fake throw.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty rad.
I mean, because that saves the tying run.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
I know it's not the World Series, but the iconic stares deep into the night.
Oh, yeah.
Probably also a good
one. Well, I was thinking about the Halladay no-hitter in the DS. I mean, that was pretty amazing if you were there. Wow. I don't know, man. A lot of cool sports memories to look back on now and things that'll stick out to you. I don't know, Rick. I'm always open for criticism, so I want to know if I'm being too mean to the Big East. I don't think so. I do like what, obviously, Villanova's done, clearly. Everybody else does. And then I think the Chris Jenkins shot is probably the biggest shot in NCAA history. Like, Luke May had a very, very, like, limited reign. Happened very, very shortly. Because that Chris Jenkins shot was bananas. 610-632-0975. I talked about that. Plus, I have not forgotten, we got to get to the Shaq and Allen Iverson thing. We're going to get to that next. More of your sports memories as well. Coffee Jones joins us at 7 o'clock. 610-632-0975. It is the Joe Torti Show. Tyler Zuli hanging out with me and you until 8 o'clock right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Tyler Zuli producing as we're hanging out together until 8 o'clock. Coffee Jones joins us at 7. Man, oh man. Now I'm going back through the archives of all of the events that I remember going to. Lots of great moments any time in sports. And obviously, that's one of the perks of going live, right? Like attending an event in person. One of the appeals, I would imagine, and the pitches is you never know. You never know when something can happen. It's like people playing the lottery, except, you know, you have a greater chance of doing it because, well, the people that are competing in the sports are significantly better than the average bear doing that. Going to get to Shaq, and I want to bring up another point regarding that in a second as well. But first, we're going to talk to Dave in Center City on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, Dave.
Short, what's going on?
How we doing, man?
You know, it's amazing you mentioned Coffee Jones coming on, and then you know what got lost in the sauce of all this? You know, the Arena Football League, they were not going to play anyway. The owners couldn't get together on workman's comp insurance for staff and players. But again, you know, that was a nice little outlet for us going to those Philadelphia Soul games.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Loved going to those games.
Yeah, I know. Tort, you do a good job announcing. Very good job. Oh, you're the McGinnis of Soul football.
Oh, wow. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Listen, my brother, I want to clean some things up.
Let's do it.
The Big East, after all those teams, what should I say, took off and ran. It was called the Big Least. It was called the Catholic Conference because all remaining teams were all Catholic universities. Now, what got lost in the sauce, Tort, is at one time they had five teams in the top 20, not the top 25 this year, the top 20. And then I believe Butler fell out and Xavier fell out.
Yes.
I'll tell you what, Tort, planets are aligned correctly. Villanova wins their third title in the last five years, but we'll never know.
Right. Yeah, isn't that the truth? Because I thought the Nova in particular, Dave, of all of the teams that, you know, because there's a handful that really have a shot, you know. I thought that Nova was probably the scariest only because they were hurt all year and were finally healthy for tournament time. I thought nobody knew how good they could be.
Yeah, by the way, Tort, they got the Yahoo.
Yes.
Top 25 out already preseason. You know, it was number one college ball. Nova.
Oh, not surprised.
Everybody back. They said this kid Gillespie out of Wood is really going to be a great college basketball player. Let me clean some Green Bay Packers mythology up.
Okay.
The Packers team that beat Bill Parcells, New England Patriots, with Drew Bledsoe at the helm. The only reason they won that game was because what's his name returned the second half kickoff for a score. Help me out, Tort. Safety for Green Bay.
They're in the Packers New England Super Bowl.
Yeah. So anyway,
I'll get it for you. I'll find it.
Yeah, it's irrelevant right now. So New England had all the momentum going into the third quarter, and that just killed them. But what killed me was Green Bay's a 10-point favorite against Denver. Okay, and I believe it was in Phoenix. And I'm like, I'm in trouble. Gilbert Brown and Reggie White are sucking wind early in the third quarter. They can't get nowhere near Elway. Davis ran the ball down their throats. That was a disgrace. Them and I blame that on Favre.
Really? Why do you put that on Favre?
All right, so the defense was sucking wind.
Yeah.
I get up there and match them score for score.
And you meant Desmond Howard, right?
Yeah.
All right, yeah.
So what are you doing with yourself, Tort?
Well,
it looks like we're going to be on this holding pattern for a long time.
I'm getting better and better, Dave, thanks for the phone call, at cutting my own hair. Doesn't look as good right now because I don't have any product in it because, you know, with all due respect to Tyler, there's no one else to impress here at the moment. But I'm getting good at this.
You want to talk about impress? I haven't shaved my beard in 3 weeks. Like, you got nothing to worry about. If anybody looks like a bum here, it's me.
All right, so my wife is more reserved, let's put it that way, than I am. Kendall Jackson helps. So after several Kendall Jacksons last night because my kids were keeping her up, the honesty came out. She said, "Joe, you've got to trim your beard." And I said, "Yeah?" Because it's hard for me to grow facial hair. All right? I'm not like this mountain man. I'm growing this thing out for weeks. Carefully, you know, making sure that everything's facing the right way and conditioning and shampooing and stuff like that. She says, "Yeah, you look like a disgusting mountain man little brother." I was like, oh, man, the last part was necessary? Oh, it's got cut to the core.
You got hit, and then when you thought you were done getting hit, you got hit again.
That was the exact delivery. I was like, oh, it was after a long day of work, you know, around trying to get stuff done in the yard. And yeah, no. So now my facial hair is sheared. The day's coming. The day's coming, Tom. The good news for you is I feel like you don't have close contact with your female friend all the time now, right? So she won't get sick of seeing you with the beard.
Well, we don't live together, so we don't see each other.
Ever?
No, we do, but we don't live so as much as you and your wife do. Obviously, you see each other all the time.
Yes. Yeah.
I think I've got just the right amount of contact with, like, without her wanting to, like, hurt me.
Okay, so you're socially distant.
Yeah, it's a nice social distance for her. Like, I would love to see her every day.
We're good.
Yeah, this is for her sake, I think, more than anything. She's like, you know what? This is enough.
So I got to tell you the truth. That hits so close to home for me because, we work this business, so we, our hours vary and our workload throughout the seasons vary, right? So I knew my wife for a long time before we got married. A long, long time. So I think that we met in, this is going to kill me, 2008. Summer of 07, going into 2008. And we got married in 2014. So you think that you know someone, you know, you spend that much time getting during the courtship process and you go on dates and they hang out. And we were at the point where we're going on vacations with each other's families and stuff like that, right? We get married, get our apartment, and she looks at me after 10 days. And she's just staring daggers at me, and I don't know what I'm doing. I'm literally in the middle of, like, cracking eggs, and I'm like, is it too loud? And she goes, you're always here. Go away.
What?
So I said, I live here. What do you mean? Like, is this over?
My name's on the lease.
Like, is this thing done in 10 days? She goes, we've had a lot of together time. I'm like, okay. That's when I started going to the gym in earnest, getting out of the way for everybody's health. So I am looking forward to that moment if you do not live with your significant other. When you do get married, Tyler, and she looks across, and you're like, honey, can I help you? She's like, yeah, I hate the way that you chew. The way that you're chewing is really, really grinding me right now, and you need to leave. And how you respond to that is going to be very exciting. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
I think mine is probably going to go the way of, when sports resume and we get back to normal functionality, mine is going to go the way of, they can't hear you, Tyler. Stop screaming at the TV. You can't impact this game.
And then you go to the bar.
Yes, I can.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't know. You don't know what would be happening if I wasn't doing this.
That's the thing. I just don't want to find out. Like, I could be doing nothing to help, and I know that I'm probably doing nothing to help. What happens if the one time I am? I'm like that meme. I'm that meme where the guy's got his finger up to it, you know, his temple of his head.
Yes.
He's like, think about it. That's me. That's all the time.
Can't worry about jinxing it if you never stop doing it. Smart. 610-632-0975. Got three more hours ahead. We're heading until 8 o'clock. It's Joe Torti and Tyler Zuli. I've got to once again tee this up because I've lied a million times. I promise I'm going to pay this off. Shaquille O'Neal in the 2001 NBA Finals said that he behaved a certain way, did certain stuff in the game because of how he felt about Allen Iverson. That will lead us off at 5 o'clock right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.